Sherlock Holmes is 100 years old this year. He was introduced to the world by his creator, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, via his publishers, Wardlock, in a story called A Study in Scarlet that appeared in something called Beaton's Christmas Album, which sold out in a couple of weeks. But that was only the beginning. Four novels and 56 short stories followed, and there are now Sherlock Holmes fans all over the world, to whom, of course, he is immortal. And letters addressed to 221B Baker Street still get a reply, telling people that Mr. Holmes thanks you for your letter, but at the moment he's in retirement in Sussex, tending his bees. Well, in honour of the great man, or rather both of them, this evening's guest is going to be Sir Arthur's daughter, Dame Jean Conan Doyle. She's the youngest child of his second marriage, and so she was born in his middle age and was 17 when he died. Dame Jean's career took her into the WAFs before the war. The WAFs became the WRAF after the war, and she rose to being all sorts of things. Station commander at Hawkinge, one of the first women to be in charge of an RAF station, and finally to being director of the WRAF, the top job for which she was made a dame in 1963, and from which she retired in 1966. Dame Jean Conan Doyle in just a moment. Dame Jean Conan Doyle is this evening's guest. Good evening, Dame Jean.
Good evening.
Now, have you been having a busy year already? Have you had invitations to centenary do's of Sherlock Holmes up and down the place?
Oh, yes, it's been a very busy year. Unfortunately, I missed the dinner in London because I was ill. And I was invited out to America for several events out there, but I couldn't go because I have a slight medical problem. But I did go to Switzerland for the unveiling of a foundation stone for a new museum, the Sherlock Holmes Museum at Marion.
This is the bottom of the Reichenbacher Falls.
Yes, indeed.
Amazing.
And that was a very eventful day. It was lovely.
He has these fans all over the world. What do you suppose the Japanese, for example, make of Sherlock Holmes?
Ah, the Japanese are very keen. Yeah. They've got a splendid Sherlock Holmes Society in Tokyo. And I met one of the leading Japanese Sherlockians out in Switzerland, and they had two television teams in Switzerland following the Sherlock Holmes Society on their visit.
But do they identify with Sherlock Holmes in Japan? It seems quite alien to their culture, doesn't it?
No, until they do, that they're very interested in Victorian values, moral values.
Oh, I see.
And they are interested. And I was given one or two very learned papers written by...
In Japanese?
In both languages.
But tell me, what was your father's view of his creation? Because, I mean, after all, he did try and kill him off at the Reichenbacher Falls, therefore, and presumably he got a bit fed up with him at that stage.
Well, yes. At that stage, he wanted to specialize on his historical novels, White Company and Sir Nigel and Uncle Bareneck and Brigadier Gerard and all his historical books, and he thought they were much more worthwhile than Sherlock Holmes. And Sherlock Holmes was taking up far too much of his time. But he's probably supposed to have hated Sherlock Holmes, and that's quite untrue. He had an affection for Holmes. Mm. And later on, when he was writing the stories which formed part of the casebook of Sherlock Holmes, I was old enough to appreciate having them read to me, and the whole family were interested in the writing of those stories. And he used to come down lunch and read us the half-written story and so on. And one realized what a great deal of amusement he got out of Holmes. He loved putting in little touches showing Holmes's rather human conceit and slight snobbishness from time to time. And he loved the little bits where he was able to make Holmes pull Watson's leg. He always had his tongue in his cheek, I think, writing the Holmes stories. He wanted them to be exciting,
yeah,
of course, but also to be humorous.
So he really, Sherlock Holmes, in a sort of a way, was a member of your family, was he?
Well, I've often said that he was rather like an uncle who lived in Australia and we'd never met. But rather like that for the children. But so were my father's other characters, Professor Challenger, perhaps even more so, and Brigadier Gerard. Mm. There are these three characters we grew up with, and of course we knew my father'd created.
Yes. But how close was the character of Sherlock Holmes to that of your father?
Oh, in personality, not at all. He said that he thought that in the creation of a character, there was bound to be the possibilities of that character in the author.
Mm.
And in my father's case, of course, my father had a great love of justice, which Holmes had. And he was very chivalrous to women.
Yeah.
And so was Holmes.
He didn't play the violin or smoke cocaine. Or
No. And I would like to say that Holmes did give up cocaine in 1902. So that he wasn't a life addict.
Mm.
I think that's been very overemphasized recently.
Did your father say, "Elementary, my dear Jean"?
No, he wouldn't have. No, he wasn't brought into our lives in that sort of way.
It's a wonderfully convincing name, though, isn't it? Sherlock Holmes. I mean, we accept it totally now. Do you know where the name came from?
Not for certain, but of course there are various theories, and one is that Holmes was from a cricketer, and of course my father was a very keen cricketer, and it could be that he picked it up from that, but I think authors... just pick a name out of a hat.
What about Sherlock? It's such an unusual Christian name.
Yes, again, I think there was a Sherlock, but I don't know.
Mm.
I couldn't say one way or the other. People have theories about it, but...
Yeah, but
no
also
one knows.
The extraordinary business about these clothes that he used to wear, which again we now take totally for granted, but a deerstalker hat and sort of a tweedy cape in the West End of London... In the Victorian days, it can't have been ordinary.
But my father never had Holmes wearing a deerstalker hat. That was the illustrator.
Really?
Sidney Paget, who was an extremely good illustrator. But my father never mentioned a deerstalker.
Oh, I see. Yes, your father wasn't too keen either on the sort of looks that Sherlock Holmes had in the illustrations, was he? He thought he was a more rugged man.
Yes, he did. He always thought that the illustrations portrayed too handsome a man. But then Sidney Paget used his brother, his rather handsome brother, as a model for the illustrations.
Oh, I see. But as he was saying, you know, we tend to forget that nowadays your father wrote an enormous amount of material, quite apart from Sherlock Holmes, as you've been saying, historical novels like Micah Clarke and all the rest, and as you said, Professor Challoner, The Last World. He had a tremendous outpouring, didn't he?
Yes, he most certainly did. But he could have written very, very much more than he did. But I think that once he had become famous, I think he felt a great responsibility towards putting something back into this world, and that he took up cases where he thought the weak were suffering and they needed a champion, and he also felt very strongly about the defense of this country. And for instance, I think many people may think that he earned his knighthood through the creation of Sherlock Holmes. Well, that is not true. We've always understood, he understood, that he got it because he wrote a pamphlet explaining Britain's position in the South African War. Because when he came back from the Boer War, where he'd been a doctor in a military hospital for some, well, not for a very long time, but for some time, a very crucial time, when he came back, he was horrified to find that on the continent of Europe, all the propaganda was pro-Boer, and nobody had put our case, and we were being accused of brutality, our soldiers of behaving in a brutal manner, which my father knew was not true.
Mm.
So he organized and put out an appeal for public subscription and wrote a pamphlet which was translated into all the different languages on the continent, and were distributed to key people or sold for a few pennies.
Yes, the thing was, he was really a great celebrity in his day, wasn't he?
Yes, he was, and he used it to help other people.
And not only in this country either, I mean, America as well. He was both his books and the man were highly regarded.
Oh,
they loved him.
Yes. Oh, indeed. Yes, he was.
Yeah. But now, physically, I think he was quite a big man, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. He wasn't as big as he sometimes described as, because he was only 6'1½". But he was very broad, very thick set, 6'1½". And, of course, he was a great sportsman. He was a very manly man. And the few sports that he didn't compete in at a very high, comparatively high level.
Yes, cricket was a big thing, though, wasn't
it? Cricket, yes, the cricket, he was minor county standard. But he played goalkeeper and back for Portsmouth.
Did he?
Soccer, yes. Oh. It was an amateur side at the time, but apparently it was the runner-up in the County Cup, and it wasn't a bad side. Mm. And he played Rugby at university. And
but cricket, he played for the MCC, I know. He got 100, I think, on his first time out at Lord's.
He didn't do that, and he got a hat-trick at Lord's once. He bowled at W.G. Grace, which I think gave him much greater pleasure than having created Sherlock Holmes. And he also, I think in a match against Cambridgeshire, he took 7 wickets for 51.
Did he, Richard?
Yes.
Oh, very good.
And in his, the best sort of minor first class cricket, he averaged 32 batting. So he was a good all-rounder.
And he was a boxer? And
he loved boxing.
And a skier?
Yes, he introduced cross-country skiing into Switzerland.
Yeah.
And but boxing was a great love of his. He thought it was as good as any sport there was.
Because he made you box, didn't he?
He didn't make me. I had to make him allow me to. He was very against it. But he did give in.
Did the writing talent come down to the next generation? Have you ever tried to write yourself?
Oh, yes, I tried when I was a small girl. I tried and I tried. But I wasn't any good at it. And since then, I've been far too busy to try. And if I did try, I know I couldn't.
But curiously, I noticed from an entry in Who's Who that you still hold the copyright on your father's works in America.
Yes, I do. Yes.
So they have different rules over there.
They do.
Do
the copyright laws are quite different from the copyright laws in this country. Very complicated. But there we are.
In that case, we won't go into it.
No.
Shall we pause and have a bit of music, and we'll be back in just a moment. Which was the Seduction theme, played by the Radio Orchestra, with John Pearson conducting and playing the piano. Dame Jean Conan Doyle is this evening's guest. Daughter of Sir Arthur, of course, whose most famous creation, Sherlock Holmes, is 100 years old this year. Consequently, I imagine there are all sorts of, I don't know, pastiches, I suppose, coming out as well, are there?
Yes, there are. I may say I'm never very happy about this, because I always think that a character belongs to the author who created that character and shouldn't be played around with later on. And writers come along and make that character do things that the original author would never have contemplated the character doing. I think it's all wrong. I think a writer should create his own characters.
Presumably they don't ask your permission before they do so.
Well, they have to in America. And I do allow a certain number of pastiches in America if they are in period, in character, and are really well written. I would rather not allow any. But why I do is that I hope by doing that I can influence the standard of pastiche which is written in this country.
Mm.
Because most people hope that their books will be published in America eventually.
True.
And unless they're a good standard, they won't be.
But of all the portrayals of Sherlock Holmes, all the film portrayals and the stage portrayals and so on, which one do you think has been the nearest to your father's idea of the character?
Do you mean on film or
yes, the sort of Basil Rathbones and all
those. What?
Well, there have been dozens of
Well, I think Basil Rathbone has probably been nearest to Holmes. Arthur Winkler was extremely good. I think that Jeremy Brett is very good, up to a point, but I think that perhaps he's a little bit too highly strung in the part at times. Holmes wasn't highly strung like that, or he may have had his moments when he was bored, but not. And also Holmes was extremely courteous. He wouldn't have been rude to people, whereas I think the Brett character does come across as rather unpleasant Holmes.
Mm. Sharp.
Yes, a bit. He was conceited, but not all that conceited. but I think he's very good, and I think the stories themselves, of course, and the production and everything, is quite the best.
Good.
Oh, I think the production's absolutely excellent.
Let's come back to the man himself and your childhood days when you were growing up. Was he a good father? Did he tell you wonderful bedtime stories?
He was extremely good father. We were all very close to our parents. And, of course, he was writing at home, and I saw a lot of him. And he was one, my mother was a very loving personality. My father was one who was always brought in as the ultimate comforter. he was very kind, and he didn't tell us stories, no. He used to organize games for us, venturous games, cross-country games, and that sort of thing, with very bloodthirsty clues.
What sort of games?
If it was a game which we were chasing a pirate or something, they would leave a rag soaked in red ink blood, things like that, and little horrible little rhymes reminding us what the evil, dangerous people we were chasing and so on. My mother used to get a little nervous about the whole thing. They didn't do us any harm.
You were the youngest, of course, and you were also a girl.
Yes.
Did that give you special privileges, or were you, by contrast, bullied?
Well, I had one brother who was inclined to resent the fact that the girl was tagging along, but on the whole, it was all right, because my father saw fair play.
He did?
Yes, he never allowed me to be bullied.
Can I ask about one aspect of your father's life, which I think has intrigued many people, certainly me, which is his spiritualism, which he came to espouse very much towards the end of his life. Now, what started that off?
Well, he became interested in psychic things in the early 1890s, and he was always active in psychic research. It wasn't something that he leapt into. It was something that he had been studying for many, many years. Mm. And when the time came that he was convinced, he was a crusader at heart, a man with enormous moral courage, and he knew that he would be ridiculed over his belief in spiritualism, but he was determined that, having found this great comfort for himself and his wife, my mother, because they had lost so many relatives in the First World War, that he would share it with others. And so he started a missionary tour, really, lecturing in various countries, in Australia, Canada, America, South Africa. And we went along too. My brothers and I all went with them. But it did mean, of course, that he wasn't writing in these years.
Yes.
So for many years, he wasn't following his profession at all.
But do you remember seances being held at home?
Oh, yes.
And did he ever contact those relatives
that he lost in the war? Yes, he did.
Yes.
All except one. I don't know which one it was, but he wrote in one of his books and said that one relative.
What did he actually believe? Did he believe in a physical presence after death? Was that his...
He believed in an afterlife, and it was possible, under certain circumstances, for that soul to communicate with people on this earth. But I may say that he always warned me and my brothers and everyone always to be on lookout for fraudulent mediumship. I'm a very skeptical person. I believe there is an afterlife, and I believe it is possible, rare, very rare, but that it is possible for communication.
You see, he did go into some strange, rather dubious areas. I mean, there was that famous case of the photograph of the fairies.
Yes, well, I think more of it has been made I don't think he has been shown in a very fair light, because at the time, of course, he was very busy on other things. He was going off to Australia to lecture, and he left a lot of the research to other people. He didn't go up himself and research things. He did see that the photographs were sent to Kodak Company to find out if they could find out whether those photographs were a fraud. And they wrote back and said that they couldn't.
Mm.
So naturally, he took the view of specialists as being very much in favor of the photographs being genuine. He wrote the book of The Coming of the Fairies, but in it he said that my judgment on this is not final. I'm afraid I haven't got the exact wording, but it amounts to this. My judgment on this is not final, but I think there is a strong case for the existence of fairies.
Yes, because the photograph now is, well...
Oh, yes, they were
fraud.
Yes, absolutely. But my father was a very honourable man, and I think he found it very difficult to believe that two girls should lie like that. And the girls did say that though the women, I should say, said that the photographs were fakes, but they had seen fairies.
Mm. Mm.
Well, I can't understand why they should lie about
No, it's all a strange story anyway.
It is. It's very strange. And there are people who say they've seen fairies. I don't know about UFOs. I wouldn't express an opinion because I've never researched.
And there speaks somebody with connections, strong connections with the RAF, indeed the WRAF. Really, which comes on to a sort of final point. Your father was very interested in all the things the services did, as you were saying earlier on. Would he have approved of women in the services, do you think?
Oh, yes, I'm sure he would. I'm sure that, because he did have a great respect for women's intellect. And though he was against the suffragettes at one time because he thought their methods were wrong, and he foresaw a lot of trouble between husband and wife and so on, he had a great respect for women.
Mm. He would really like to have fought, wouldn't he, in
oh, yes,
the Boer
very
War
much
and
so.
The First World War?
Very much so. And after all, you ask about whether he would have approved of women in the services. Well, the moment I was old enough, I was whisked up to join the Brownies. And the village pack, and my father was all for that and all for the, and so I think he would have thought that service to one's country was a very honourable profession.
Well, he's obviously a very remarkable man indeed, and his famous creation, Sherlock Holmes, it seems to me, is as alive today as he ever was, isn't he? He still gets his fan mail, and he still has tremendous hordes of fans all over the world.
He still takes up a lot of time. I understand my father getting tired of him at one stage, because certainly this year Sherlock Holmes is not letting me have much time for anything else than the nonfiction correspondence.
Well, I'm very glad
talking about him.
He gave you time to come and see us this evening, Jane.
Oh, it's delightful to come and meet you.
Bye-bye. Thank you very much indeed.